Hello. Oh, you respond. That's really beautiful. It's Epiphany Sunday. Are there any people who like follow the Christian season calendar? I'm super excited that it's Epiphany Sunday today, and it feels, I use a word called numinous quite often, kind of an inspirited word. It feels numinous that this is the day that we're starting this work. So with whatever you bring, I just want you and even need you to know it is welcome. We need all of your reality for this work. So let's bring it, and I'm going to do the same, and let's see how the Lord wants to do his work in us. Just as I start, I'm not used to bright stages and low lights and all these things. Is there anybody that I know in this room? Like, if I've met you before, can you just wave at me? Thank you, Chandra. That's great. So there's a few that I know that come here to Lakeview, and that's just, yeah, a gift to know that I'm coming to be among friends. And so as we do this, I'm going to take a deep breath. You take a deep breath. And I want to warn you. The work that we do here inherently, just because of even naming it, actually activates an internal defense system that we've all been built with. We all have it. And so for this next month, it's very appropriate that this is called wrestling. Wrestling with God, wrestling with ourselves, wrestling with life. If you can imagine like a secure building where, you know, and you see it on movies all the time, there's this great security system and the robbers come in and they trip the laser line and the alarms start blaring. That might happen for you over this next month. And I want you to know that that is excellent. If that happens for you, we're on the right track. If it doesn't happen for you, it might be that you've already started disarming your system. And so this work will become relief and joy and delight in a different way, because ultimately, this is good news. We are heading into very free and lovely territory, but it takes a little bit to get there, a little wrestling. And I'm not an expert wrestler, but I did grow up with two brothers, my older one of which had no trouble hurting me. And so I understand a little bit about wrestling. So if you notice along the way that, you know, there's some tightness in your chest, or some, oh, she said that? Or like, what? What is this? Or a little like, oh, is that theologically accurate? Or any of those kinds of things, that's your defense system, and it's very wise. And so, again, we welcome it. And this is, like, when we first meet each other, this is the time where we'll immediately start assessing each other, right? Like, I'm here for 4 weeks. What do you think of this? Oh, I have to be under her for 4 weeks? Or like, oh, that's amazing. Oh, and then she said that, and I don't like that. And like, there's all this posturing that we do. These are the things that I just want you to start to notice and become aware of, because it becomes really excellent food for your curiosity and for prayer. So, take a deep breath. We're going to do it together. We're fellow travelers. If, you know, there's any chance that I have anyone here in the room who feels like they're at the end of their rope, I especially want you to know that you're in a holy place, and that it's, that is the spot. When we're done with all of our strategies, when we don't know what the next step is, when we're utterly undone, and I have been there. I was there this week. That is a holy place, because God comes in and somehow guides us into paths of righteousness beyond our understanding. So stay there. Take courage. It's going to be okay. In Matthew 11, 28 to 30, Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon me and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. That's it, friends. That's what we're going for. I don't know about you, but I've spent a lot of time wondering what that light yoke is all about, because everything that I was feeling felt rather heavy. But I have come to a place, even in this moment, I feel like I'm feeling the lightness of the Lord. And so let's just hold that in our mind as we do this. So quick overview, we're here for 4 weeks. Week one, we're going to define and try to like wrap our heads around what this true self, false self business is, and this self to lose, this self to find that Paul talks about in Colossians, Ephesians, in Luke, it's referred to. So we've got lots of, you know, biblical grounds for this, but it's really hard to get our heads around. And I had a terrible time trying to make this logical and ordered, but I've lived it. And so I'm bringing you my lived experience in this. Next week, I want to talk a bit about our personality system, which the one that I've come to work with, a tool that I've found helpful, is called the Enneagram. And yes, I bring this inside jails and prisons, particularly Pine Grove Women's Correctional in Prince Albert. And it's amazing how the Lord has given us tools to be able to uncover some of the under layers of what we do. And it's amazing how when we can see it, no matter how trapped we are, there is freedom and light and goodness. And then the week after, I want to talk a bit about what it means to lay down our defenses and live into God's kingdom reign right here, right now in our hearts. And then we'll move to the final week, hanging out with the Samaritan woman at the well, and just see what Jesus might offer us in the midst of where he's taken us over the month. So that's a bit of the journey. I'm totally prepared to be sidelined, and we'll just see where it goes from there. You will have a home church guide that you can follow in your home church groups, and not this week, next week. I want us to get a Spotify playlist going. I found the best way to do this work is to marinate a little bit. So we're gonna marinate in song. And I'm wanting like a whole slew of genres. So it's gonna be a collaborative thing. So already start paying attention to songs that you feel like kind of illuminate. Because, I mean, there's a very good chance you already kind of have a hint about what this journey from our false self to our true self is. And so pay attention to what songs really speak to that for you, because I want you to add them to the list. I mean, I've got anywhere from NF to Josh Garrels to U2 to Ally Page, you know. So it might not be everybody's thing, but let's get a whole collection out there and do this work together. This is my prayer. I love this prayer as we begin all things, especially when our defense systems are going to be triggered. So to the degree that you feel open and available, let's pray this prayer over us. Gentle us, Holy One, into an unclenched moment. A deep breath, a letting go of heavy expectancies, of shriveling anxieties, of dead certainties, that softened by the silence, surrounded by the light, and open to mystery, we may be found by wholeness, upheld by the unfathomable, entranced by the simple, and filled with the joy that is you. Amen. So my first gateway for us into this work brings me to this lovely Matryoshka doll, because it so beautifully illuminates the work. And so I'm going to use my life as an example, but anyone can throw their own layers into this. And it's true, isn't it? We all have layers to us. And so if I were to start, you know, telling you a little bit about myself that I feel happy to share, I might say that I'm a wife and I'm a mother, and Paul already told you I've got a few degrees, and we know them from like almost 15 years ago, which is exciting. But I've also traveled to about 25 different countries in the world. There's a little art group that I love running. We don't meet often enough, but the people are just so beautiful. And I call myself the rogue artiste. We all have to have like little names for ourselves. So like, don't be surprised if I go rogue every now and again. And I led backpacking camps back in the day with my husband. I love nature and love seeing how God is created there. It's a little tiny bit about me. And if that's all that you knew, it wouldn't be all of it, that's for sure. If I would allow myself to go a layer deeper, I might let you know that the truth is I am riddled with insecurities on every front. I can shame myself for just about every word that I speak. I can second guess every action that I do and wonder where my motives came from. I have a harsh inner critic. And I've spent most of my life in some way or another not feeling like I'm enough. Not enough this, not enough that, if I had this. In many ways, especially on Tuesday, the idea of being here on this stage undid me. That's a few things about me, but not all the things. If I go a layer deeper, I might tell you that there is a relentless fuel that drives me, where every moment of the day, it's like I'm working for my worthiness. Like if I don't show up and say the exact right words in the exact right way, somebody's gonna like, you know, chop my head off or cast me away. And in that, I think part of the drive is that I don't want to actually just be enough. I want to be amazing. I want to be phenomenal. In fact, I need it. There's something in me that needs it to be okay. What is that? But it's that need, that piece that actually drives me to be a super kind person often and very helpful and very like intuitive about what your needs are. And I'll say hello very nicely. And I greeted some of you as you came in here, and that was really lovely. And I did actually mean it. But there's a piece in me that also so desperately wants to be loved that I'm trying to sort out who I need to be for you so that I'm going to be okay. That's a thing. The biggest trouble with that for me is that it makes me somebody who is always looking to find what the needs are in the room and meet them, and I neglect my own entirely. I've spent decades of my life having no clue what I want or what my preference is or knowing how to go take my own nap because I am so busy trying to work to be okay for everybody else, which actually is loaded with pride and has given me a savior complex where it's like, oh, you need some help and I happen to know what it is and I will come and save you. Ooh, that's where it starts getting really sticky. It's not as pretty there, but yeah, not a place that I love to stay, but true. And if that's all that I told you about me, it would again be true and not all of it. If I go another layer down, I need to let you know that I am an addict. Substances haven't been my thing, but I am an affection and affirmation junkie for sure. I seek those like an addict would seek a heroin hit. If I don't feel loved or affirmed in any moment, it's like my whole body revolts and I can feel it inside of me. And it's like, what do I need to get the love that I need in this moment? And there's this working. And it's not just affirmation and affection. It's like addictions to control or food or comfort or even rejecting myself. Because if I reject myself first, then any rejecting you might do of me doesn't hurt as much. And so it can create these systems within myself that defend and try to protect me so that I ultimately can get what I want. And goodness, the layers just keep going and going and going. And if I get to the bottom, this place right here, I realize that underneath all of this, there is just a trembling little girl who's shaking in her boots, who just wants to be held, who just wants to know that life is going to be okay and that I'm wanted and loved without any of that working, just for being me, just as is, that I could just show up and actually just be the enough for showing up, as opposed to having to work and get my hair cut and do all the things right. That fear becomes the place that actually ends up fueling the addictions and my vices and my shames and my emotions, my insecurities, and dictates how I allow myself to be known in the world, which always keeps me in a place of going, well, if you actually knew me, you might not actually like me. And so therefore, I haven't fully accepted me, and so no one else, I believe, can actually accept me, and then we're stuck. And I would say that this right here, this is what, with the Enneagram Prison Project, we call the prison of our own makings. This place that we get stuck in, that we can't get out of, that we just end up staying on automatic for, kind of asleep to these patterns, and we don't even know that we're doing them until we realize that we've hit a wall and it's not working for us, and so we need to stop. So, this right here, at the core, this is the place where I've come to discover that God wants to change my operating system. He wants to come in and actually switch the disc. He wants to come in and start making my newness happen right here by calling me beloved, right here, right now, in this spot. And when I believe that, it doesn't mean that all of a sudden I become perfect. It means that I can actually live if I feel humiliated or if I'm imperfect or in my own estimation. It means that there is a security that is holding me beyond the perceptions of those around me. That's the place that then sets me free to realize my addictions. Oh, yeah, they're kind of funny, actually. Gosh, I'm doing that again. Interesting. Why do I do that? Huh. Okay, Lord, you can hang on to that one. And then I can look at my pride and go, oh, Lord, like, have mercy. I can, like, have an active life of confession every day when I start really noticing my patterns and habits. My insecurities melt because there is this God that's holding me, that's doing the work. There is then a whole different world available for me when it comes to being known. Because I can tell you all of it, and I'm not trying to hide. It all belongs, and it is the place from which God makes us free. So, this is the work. This is where we're going. This isn't comfortable. And we need to do this work and come at it a little bit sideways, because if we come at it directly, we'll automatically be activated. So we have creation. This is so beautiful. I just love that God has built this into the framework of the ordered, created world. In Romans 1:20, it says, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse." This is amazing. To me, this says that God's eternal power and divine nature, these invisible qualities that I'm often wondering, where are you, God, in your strength, in your eternal power and divine nature? Where are you? Ha, he's hidden it in that which he's made. Not only does that mean you and me, but other pieces of creation. And in my Bachelor of Science degree, when I was really like just learning about how the natural world works, my eyes were just opened to how, wow, God has built this into the fabric of his creation. And so we are going to use creation as a metaphor to do this work, and we're going to use art and a whole bunch of things. And I'm going to start with art. So this is an engraving by William Blake that he did in 1793. This was a time where, you know, man hadn't landed on the moon yet. And there was this, imagine if we could land on the moon. And so he has this engraving, and it's this, he calls it "I Want, I Want," which I find fascinating. It's this relentless reaching for the things that we want. Like, can you just feel that pull for a minute? That, like, I want. Take a minute and notice. What are the things inside of you that just have you wanting something? This isn't done yet, and I don't care if it's the chocolate chips in the cupboard, or whether it's restoration or wholeness, or whether it's more video games, or whatever it is. There is something inside of us that wants, and it is a relentless reach that never satisfies in the end. Never satisfies. And if you allow yourself to actually, like, notice how your body responds to that, that becomes, I have found, one of my truest guides along the way. My body has a felt sense of that reach, that, like, I need this right now, let's go. And I'm, like, wanting something, and I'm pushing for it. If that's a feeling, an emotion that you're familiar with, emotion within yourself, then please continue to just pay attention to it. Pay attention to it, because that can wake us up to the real work. And it's so beautiful, though, that these wants that we have never work in the long run. The fact that they never take us home to what we really want is the gift. Because we are made to not only know the fountain and the spring of living water, but to be united with it, to be the spring. Frank Lloyd Wright, an architect, I am not an expert architect, but in 1935, he was asked by a family, he was contracted by them, to see if he could build a house that would view the waterfall on Bear Run Waterfall in Pennsylvania, so that it would, like, be this beautiful house that viewed these falls. And Frank Lloyd Wright is an organic architect, meaning he wants to integrate humans and architect and nature and bring it all together. It just didn't sit right for him. So he ended up building them a house that was the waterfall, in a sense. The spring of water gushing out of it, it kind of looks like. I've been sitting with this image for about a month, just letting it sit with me. Leanne, can you be the spring of living water? It means you don't actually get to take a view. Because if we get a view of something, we can go, oh, wow, that's so beautiful, I'm so amazing, yay, all these things. No, there's something different that happens when it's like, oh, what if I became available to actually be the springs of living water that Jesus talks about and allowed that to flow through me? What would that actually be like? And so we've got these two selves inside of us, in a sense. One that really actually reaches relentlessly, trusting our own resources and ability. And then another one that actually has to rest into a radical trust in God, that stops its reaching and actually turns toward God. Do you notice how in the etching of the I want picture, all our desires, our ideals, these things we're trying to be, actually take us away from relationship? There's two people in the background. And I just think that is so true. That relentless reach actually keeps us separated. It's a separate self that it's created in us. And we actually are never truly known by others, by God, and even ourselves. Whereas the springs of living water actually make us available to actually be an icon of goodness and beauty in the world. For any Kirk Thompson fans, he offers the Being Known podcast, and that's a phrase he uses all the time, which I've loved. The next, so that's one way to think about these things. You've got a story about me, you've got a few pictures in your brain. I want to offer you for a moment The Very Hungry Caterpillar by Eric Carle. If you are a parent and feel too exhausted to do this work, just read this book to your children, because this is it to a T. If we think that creation can actually show us the way, it is the humble caterpillar. Because goodness, I mean, I'm not going to read the whole book, but it starts with this little egg on this leaf, and then this caterpillar like goes about his day, and he's hungry. And so he eats through, and you can go through the days, and it's fun little pages, and he has an apple and a pear and three prunes and strawberries and all these things, and he gets to Saturday, and I mean, he eats one piece of chocolate cake, one ice cream cone, one pickle, one slice of Swiss cheese, one slice of salami, one lollipop, one piece of cherry pie, one sausage, one cupcake, and one slice of watermelon, and then he had a stomach ache. Friends, this is so instructive for us, because our relentless reaching eventually gives us a stomach ache. There's a natural process to it. And so that is worthy of our attention. And so with our caterpillar, you know, the next day was Sunday, which, you know, the caterpillar ate a nice green leaf, and he realized he wasn't hungry anymore, but he was enormous. And then he built a small house, a chrysalis, and hung out there for a while. And voila, there was this gorgeous butterfly. I don't know how creation does this, but I have every confidence that as a caterpillar is hanging out in the world, it doesn't think, oh, one day I'm going to be this beautiful butterfly. When you're a caterpillar and you're hungry and you're hungry, you're just hungry. And at some point, our hungers stop us and we get a stomach ache and we're done. And it's just natural inside of us. And then there's this sacred moment, and it's usually at the end of your rope, where I feel like God enfolds me in a chrysalis and says, Leanne, stop, stay. Do you know what happens inside of a chrysalis? That caterpillar liquefies, comes to nothing. I think there's a few nerve threads that remain, and there's probably a beautiful science word for that. Have you ever felt like you were being liquefied by your life? That your friends or your kids or your parents or your husband or your job or whatever it is, your neighbors, just aren't working for you? Friends, this is liquefaction, and we're going to come back to your body. Your body feels it. Your body feels a heat. It feels a charge. It feels intense. It needs to go and make something happen to change. That is not appropriate. That can't happen like this way. There's, that's it. And when it never works for you, because that's been the story of my life, I want you to know that's a gift. Stay. That was Moses' instruction as he faced this Red Sea with this army behind him. Stand still, and you will see the deliverance of your God. So in this moment when you feel like all of life is not working, stay. And it's from that place, which is the hardest work you've ever done, and staying actually means staying with yourself. It doesn't mean stop doing anything, because sometimes we actually still need to wake up and change a diaper or do life. Sometimes it means we have to take action that we were terrified to take. Sometimes it means we need to back right off. But when I'm saying stay, I'm meaning stay in the surrender of opening to God and allowing him to do his work. Because my goodness, there is glory on the other side. The chrysalis reminds us of this promise that new life is coming, that resurrection is possible. And if you find this hard, just know that, like, this is, I think, why God had to send Jesus. There is nothing in us as humans that intuits how to do this work. We can't instinctively know how this happens. But man, thank goodness we have Jesus who showed us what it was to live a life that required a certain kind of death to meet resurrection. And that's the hope. That's the hope that we're going for. So, in Ephesians 4, 22 to 24, it says, we were taught with regard to our former way of life to put off your old self, which has been corrupted by its deceitful desires. Can you feel that stretch, the I want, that relentless reach? To be made new in the attitude of our minds and to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. Oh, this is the springs of living water. This is the glory of the butterfly. This is freedom. And in Colossians 3, 9 to 10, you've taken off your old self with its practices and put on a new self, which has been renewed in the knowledge and image of its creator. This is the life that in Luke it talks about needing to deny ourselves, take up our cross when daily and follow. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it. This is ourselves to lose, and this is the self to find. And so I'm calling this the true self and the false self, but there's other teachers who have called this many other things. You can have the authentic self and the adapted self and new creation versus old creation. There's all these terms that we can do. I'm going to offer you a definition from Marilyn Vansel, who says, our old self or false self develops out of our need to adapt, adjust, and accommodate to the world in which we live. It's the self we eventually believe we must be in order to survive and have our basic needs met. This is the self to lose. So what we're talking about here, this part in us that feels like I have to be this to be okay, that's like, feel it in yourself. It's hard, it's rigid, it's demanding, it's automatic. This is the self that through the course of your life, you've developed really intelligent strategies to survive around, and the Lord's designed it, just like the caterpillar, that at some point it's gonna stop working for you. This is a gift, and this is grace, and it's what actually does the work. And then there's the true self, or the new self, the one created to reflect God's image in a unique way. Which I love. Like, guess what? The Lord actually doesn't want you to worship him like your neighbor or like me. He doesn't want to have a relationship with you that he has with somebody else. So often we're like, oh, if I could only be like that person. Actually, that is not the Lord's end game for you at all. He made you in a unique way, and he wants that to be the way he encounters you. It's our deeper self that's made to be in union with God. It's the self that longs to emerge through the layers of our adapted self in order to experience and express our original design. That is our self to find. And it's way harder to define. It's like, you know, trying to define the shape of water. But we know it because there's something in our bodies that comes to this rest at certain points. And we just know that we know that we know that we're okay. After we've gone through the profound wrestle of all these other layers that we have. So the caterpillar is not our only symbol that shows us how to do this death to life business. We also have the mighty seed. A seed, looking at a sunflower seed, you would never guess the sunflower, but look, here it is. It happens. And I love that in John 12 it says, I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it will only remain a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. I think we as humans are designed to live these multiple sheddings, like these mini little deaths before we actually die. And I mean, Richard Rohr is somebody who's written quite eloquently on the true self and false self. And he says, the big pattern leading to transformation or resurrection says there's a gate through which you must pass. Even though that gate has 1,000 forms, you must die before you die. And then you will know how to die and not be afraid of it. That's what we're talking about. The path of dying and rising is the only path that allows us to say afterward, what did I ever lose by dying? It is the letting go of all we think we are, moving into a world without any experienced context and becoming the person you always were anyway, which you always knew at a depth and yet did not know at all on the surface. Can you feel the liquefaction inside the chrysalis? It's like, and poets have talked about this, like there's a whole thing about how art and the world has tried to express this. T.S. Eliot says, in my end is my beginning. It's a beautiful way to phrase it. So this is the wrestle. It's the wrestle with ourselves for our very lives. And in doing so, we discover and grow into our truest identity, which is only found. And this is freedom. Oh, it's so good. It is for freedom that Christ has actually set us free. Like, this is why he came. And yet, I don't know about you, but it's taken me a long time to get to this place of going, oh, this is what that freedom is. So it is worth our effort. It's worth our attention for this month. And it is a lifetime of work. We actually don't come to the end of it. It's like they're between dragonflies, crabs, snakes, like all of nature actually reflects how many times they have to shed their own skins to become their true form. Like we too. Dragonflies need to shed their, like when they're still a larva, like it can be 5 to 14 times before they actually take on their true form. So again, let's just rest. Notice creation around you. It has shown us how to do this. And take a minute. I want to close with just giving you a few moments to take a deep breath and notice where you are. This journey from our false self into our true selves, we cannot muscle. The part in you that really wants to get there is the part that can't do it. I know that sounds terrible, but isn't it amazing? So I love that this is a growth chart that I'm showing you, because I don't know about you, but I did not muscle my way to be a 49-year-old woman. Like somehow my body just grew and here I am. This is how the Lord in his grace actually grows us. Our lives, the people around you, actually are the things that God uses to shape you and liquefy you and melt you so that you can be reborn. And I feel like every single cell in my body needs a different kind of like resurrection. So you will be at multiple phases of this in your life at one time. There might be one moment where it's like, oh, I'm so free in this area that I used to be bound. Well, there's another area that's like, oh, I'm so constricted and trapped. Yes, that's exactly how it works. So in the, you know, multitude of angles within yourself, where do you feel like you're being born? Where are you right at the beginning of growth? Where are you super hungry and unstoppable in your hunger and you just are looking for control or praise or food or whatever it is? Where are you voracious? Just notice. Notice how hard you might be on yourself about it. Where do you not feel like you know the way forward? And where are you free? The Son of God is shining down on it all. causing you to grow and loving you with his unstoppable love. I just want to close with this transforming prayer that you are welcome to join me in to the degree that you feel open. God of making and unmaking, of tearing down and recreating, you are my home and habitation, my refuge and my place of dwelling. In your hollows, I am reformed, given welcome and benediction, beckoned to rest and rise again, made ready and sent forth. Lord, may it be so. Amen.